Welcome to Creative Block, where your hosts V
and Sean. We interview people in the creative industries about their life, work, and hobbies while we doodle jam.
We ask people on our social medias if they had specific topics they wanted us to discuss, as well as some drawing prompts.
Today we have with us Jess Cuff. Welcome on.
Thank you. Thanks you guys for having me. I'm excited.
Welcome upon our podcast.
Yeah.
We're so excited to have you. And I'm also really happy because we got to work together really fast on Wings of Fire, but we didn't get to like really know each other. So
yeah, like actually chat and hang and everything. It was so fast, but I'm excited. This is gonna be fun.
Well, it's about time. And also the main problem before when you guys were working together is you didn't hang out with me on it
yes.
either. So now we can...
It's a hinge, right? You gotta bring it together.
But we have so many similarities already because we found out through one of the questions of our listeners that we all play D&D, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whoa, that's cool. Nice.
Yeah, I love D&D,
I've at the
guys.
Very least, I've at the very least dabbled. I've to be honest with you, I've mostly played the off the beaten path types, like the like okay, like you know, it's Humblewood where everyone's a forest creature, or
mm-hmm.
like you know, a sci-fi one. Or I've mostly played those ones rather than like playing a whole lot of standard D&D, but I do enjoy it when I play.
Yeah, D&D is such a fun game, and it's so cool that it's opened up to like all of these other like fringe games or expanded on stuff. Like I love playing Kids on Bikes and Kids on Brooms. I love setting up Dread games and all that stuff. It's just such a blast to be able to do and everything. So,
are you a DM?
Yeah, I DM and I GM actually. And minor plug, but this last year I got the chance to be able to DM for an event called Nerd Night Drinking in Dragons, which is super cool. It was so much fun. I had such a blast, but I've been to that event multiple times because I love doodling for those events.
Ooh, yeah.
Like when things are going on. So it's a ton of fun. But yeah, I run several games for friends, like especially college friends that have moved down and stuff, and for co-workers and everything from the multiple projects I've been on. So,
you're like the designated DM on all the shows.
I have the habit of volunteering, like
I have a friend like that, Kyle Caps. He's like the DM for everybody. That's so funny.
Dungeons and Dragons is such a fun way to practice world and character building, and the applications of like bringing it into storyboarding, storytelling, character building, world building, I feel like is so interesting. And is that something that you've like made a link to, or have you used any of like D&D sheets to like ever figure out a character in a cartoon, that kind of thing?
It's definitely, I would healthily say it's up to my storyboard and storytelling game.
I think
very much that when it comes to building, especially when you're opening up to like more of a collaborative sense, right? It's something that's ingrained in being able to play D&D or any type of these story, like heavy story based role-playing games. I like playing heavy story based. Some people really love being able to play like more like, you know, folks that love min-maxing and like Baldur's Gate and stuff like that. And that stuff's fun too. But I like being able to build a ton of story. So when it comes to D&D, that's what I like to focus the most on.
Oh yeah, like storytelling and like building all the fun lore and characters. You said that you played D&D with the people in college. Where did you go to college?
I attended the Academy of Art University in San Francisco. It was it was a really fun time to be able to go. I had a blast. I love the city, and I met a ton of friends that, you know, have been lifelong friends now. But it was a really fun, exciting experience. So, yeah.
Nice. Did you major in animation or?
I did. I majored in animation. I majored in specifically 2D animation for character animating and design and stuff. So.
And I like to ask this question about how did you find your first gig, and how long did it take between the moment you graduated to the moment that you landed your first gig?
It took a little bit. I ended up, I mean, like, that's kind of the case, is that much like quite a few folks, is that it's not instantaneous, right, when you first come out of college. So I was working as a lab tech for our storyboard, sorry, not storyboard, stop motion animation department.
Oh, cool.
For the academy. Yeah, we ended up having a ton of different types of animation options that you could go into, especially with Pixar right across the street, Laika's
Oh,
coming up, like we
right.
had Coraline show up and all that stuff. So it was really fun to be able to dabble in all kinds of different mediums. And so working as a lab tech for about 2 years or so, there's an event at the academy called Spring Show that showcases all of the graduate work for everybody that is graduating, and then different folks from studios in LA or, across the pond or wherever come to the academy and see everyone's stuff. They can talk to them about internships and new jobs. They get to see all the new work and everything. But one of the helpers had dropped out, and so I was asked to come and help out, and I'm like, yeah, I've got a Saturday open. I'm fine to come, And as I'm helping out and touring around the place, at one point, one of the heads of the department, who used to be one of my teachers, she's like, "Hey, Beth Souza, hey Beth," she had me show around to gentlemen to where they were going to be having lunch, like just kind of walking them around a little bit, show them where lunch is. And when we got there, it turned out that the kitchen had caught fire. Yeah, 100% by happenstance. Like it
So
was like a
the
straight
food was
fire,
already cooked.
right? It
Nice.
was
You just walk
already
up and you
like
put the steak, from the ground on
it was
your.
all set, skewers and everything. Well, we actually had some folks come back and be like, "Hey, actually, lunch is postponed by like 20 minutes or so." So I was like, "Okay, well, do you guys want me to show you around?" So I end up showing them around. They really thank me. They liked talking to me. So they're like, "Hey, my name is Ken. This is Howard. Why don't you join us for lunch?" So I was like, "Okay, cool." Lunch happens. We have a really nice time chatting. And then I just go back to work, kind of, being about doing however. I see them taking interviews and portfolio reviews with a few students. And then Beth comes back over towards the end of the event and she's like, "Jess, do you have your iPad on you?" It's like, "Yes." She's like, "Okay, cool. Let me just," and she just drags me to a chair, sits me down, and she's like, Do you have your portfolio on your website and stuff like that?" I'm like, "Yeah, I have all that up. Beth, what's going on?" She's like, "Okay, cool. Wait right here." And then she goes out, comes back with Ken and Howard, and they're like, "Haven't we already talked to you?" I was like, "Yes, but I also draw." And it turns out those guys were the heads of Marvel Animation Studios down in LA. It's Ken Ito and Howard Schwartz, head producer and then head of the studio, head of animation. And they asked, "Hey, do you want to come down for a tour sometime to LA?" And I was like, "Absolutely."
Heck, that's awesome. Right place, right time.
Yeah, right place,
Yeah.
right time, And it was definitely a case of like being ready for when the opportunity arose, because I had no idea it would happen, but I was ready for when it showed up,
That is so cool. Wow. And you said so it was 2 years until that happened, right? But then you were around the school because being a lab tech just kind of like kept you kind of around these opportunities. Oh, that is so cool. How was it like the first day on the job?
It was kind of like a dream in a sense. I know a lot of people can describe it that way. It was
Kind of
just
dream?
it was just so exciting. Like getting a tour of the studio was so cool. Getting to see like where folks were drawing, getting to talk to folks that were actively working on different projects that were there. I got to see, and a ton of them are now friends who had worked on like Hulk and the Ages of Smash, Ultimate Spider-Man, Avengers Assemble, which I ended up getting to work on. Like, it was so cool.
That is so cool. Yeah, wow. And so you started as a, did you start as a revisionist?
I actually started out in freelance character design, to be honest. It was freelance for Avengers Assemble, working with Nick Lombardo, which was so cool. Nick's such a nice guy. But getting to do that and then, but yeah, I actually got to work on character design first. I was doing freelance character design with Nick Lombardo, and then I was asked to do a test, you know, in the that kind of practice still going on, but got to do a test for Avengers Assemble to do storyboards. And it turned out pretty cool. But when I sent it in, they were kind of looking at it like, this is neat. This is pretty cool. I could see where you're going with it, but you know, we were kind of looking for something pushed a little bit further, however. And so I asked very politely, I will wag on my finger. I did ask, you know, after that, after I got sent back, hey, this looks really great, but you've got, you know, a little bit more growing to do so far as your storytelling technique and stuff. And so I asked, hey, can I come and get some notes? Like, is it okay to ask, you know, where could I do better? What can I do better from you guys? Is that okay? And they were like, yeah, sure. That sounds fine to us. I was like, great. I will be down the next day. So I came in and talked with Jeff Allen, who was supervising on Avengers Assemble, and then Phil, who was supervising on Ultimate Spider-Man. And both of them gave me really great advice, really great notes on where I could build, push a little bit more action, kind of go discover what I liked about pushing acting and characters and what I saw in them and everything. That's what they're wanting to see. So I was like, cool. Could I do it again? Is that okay? Can I
Oh,
take
that's
your
cool.
notes and redo it for this test? They're like, if you'd like, you know, I don't see why not. I didn't know that most people don't ask to do
That's
that.
so true. Like,
Most
so that's
people
so
don't,
true
you know.
that you bring that up, because I feel like what you said, it's like most people don't ask for it. And I also didn't realize until we talked to a bunch of people that it's okay to ask for notes on a test. And I think most of the time it's received positively because it shows that you're willing to take notes and criticism. So I think that's not criticism, but critique, I guess. I don't know what the, you know,
I
but
feel
like.
like they're either gonna not get back to you at all, or they're gonna maybe help you out a little bit. You know what I mean? And
Yeah.
that's it's not gonna hurt, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. It's not gonna hurt to be able to ask, but most people asking for these kinds of tests, you can run into, sadly, you can run into some folks that may be taking advantage of you doing this kind of free work in a lot of
That's true.
cases. Like in my case, my test was voluntary. Like I did this work to be able to do for them. These guys were amazing. They were wonderful to me and everything, and especially once I was able to get the position, like I had a blast working for these guys. But yeah, some folks are unfortunate to be able to be in a situation where it's not properly beneficial for the artists to be able to do a proper test, which is never, I don't think that kind of thing is okay.
Yeah.
But getting the chance to go back and do these changes on my test, I like duplicated the amount of work. I redid everything. I put extra effects and camera moves and all this like explosions and everything into the sequence. And when I sent it back, I was like, oh, cool, done. I just felt perfectly tired for the rest of the day. I was
Yeah.
like, all right, that's it. And then the next day, I believe, I get a call from Jeff and he's like, hey, we got your test. This is great. Do you want to
Oh.
do revisions on Avengers Assemble? And I was like, yes,
Yo,
yes,
yes.
yes, yes, absolutely.
Cuz sometimes I feel like when you hear the words, you have some more growing to do storytelling wise, it can feel like, oh, you're still a few years away from this. But you were just like, hey, I have it in me right now. I just need to know how not to play safe, or like, or when to push, or when,
Exactly. There's the inclination, especially as artists, there's the inclination being
Mm-hmm.
like, our job is to appeal to somebody else. So your first thought is, how would you like to see this done? Not really, how would I like to see this done? And having that reminder of, hey, all of these notes that we're giving you, this is the stuff you like seeing in other things. So why not have that in your work? And sometimes you kind of need that reminder, you know, to kind of appreciate the stuff that you do know you can bring to the table, but it's also having the initiative to be like, hey, you giving me these notes, I want to do this work and I want to show you that I can do this work, you know?
Yeah, that's amazing. That's so cool. Wow. And how is it going from designs to revisions?
It was it definitely was what I was hoping for. Doing designs can be a little bit, not necessarily rigid, but a lot more structured than doing storyboards, where it's much more free flowing, being able to do more sketchy lines and poses and stuff. But I back and forth on being able to help out with design freelance and being able to work on storyboards for Avengers Assemble. For Avengers, it was a lot of revisions work up until Black Panther's Quest, and then I got upgraded to doing full boards, which was so exciting. I was super excited to be able to do it. That was awesome.
That's so cool. I feel like, and yeah, like so I it's so cool because you've gone from design, you've gone to revision and then boards and then directing. And I think like we might fast forward a little bit just so you can talk about all of these different crafts. And so becoming a director, what was the most useful things that you learned throughout all of your previous gigs?
I think probably some of the most useful is being able to capitalize on staging. When you're given a larger set piece or a lot of room to be able to use, you should use it. Big, bold, capital letters. Don't be afraid to have people jumping off of things. There was the joke when I was working on Gremlins, and even when I was revisions directing, is the joke I would make with one of our guys is, okay, so what can I destroy? Like, what can I blow up? And they're like, Jess, we know you're coming from superheroes. We know you're coming from Avengers, where you're, you know, smashing apart New York City or blowing up Wakanda or whatever. Okay, this is CG, Jess. You can only blow up so much. So it definitely following your gut and kind of having a natural initiative to question what we can do is possible, or rather, kind of questioning what possibilities that we can have when it comes to the medium that we're working with. There's a huge difference between working in 2D and working in 3D. So, really, or in CG, really kind of understanding that on top of a lot of animation nowadays is really wanting stuff cinematic, which is the kind of stuff I love. Bread and butter, love that kind of a look. So being able to bring that kind of a look to like freelance for Invincible or in Gremlins or to Black Panther's Quest, that kind of drama when it comes to the acting, everything, loved it. And so pushing on it even more and being kind of ravenous for no matter who you're working with, I love this technique. Can you show me what you were doing here? Can you teach me about this? From directors I had to even board artists that were under me, everybody's bringing something unique to the table. So really capitalizing on that.
Yeah, that's so true. I feel like, man, when you have like a team who's excited about like bringing stuff to the story, it's just so fun because then you just get to kind of play. Wait, can you talk a little bit about the difference between like working on 2D and CG? Since you've like worked a bunch in both.
Yeah, it's definitely both have their challenges, right? In 2D, everything that you're building is everything has to be drawn from the backgrounds to, like I said, smashing buildings apart to if characters have changes in their character design, even as minimal as having like a cut on their face now, that stuff has to be tracked through the rest of the episode because an audience will notice. Right? Especially in a CG show when everybody's getting beaten up everywhere. If Spider-Man's mask isn't on his head, He needs to not have it the whole rest until he picks it up again at some point.
Yeah.
But counter to that, in CG, there's a greater allowance for being able to have those kinds of changes because you can have them just built into the model. So you have different models that will have those changes already put into it. And those kinds of things can be called out in all of pre-production, which is where storyboards lives, right? The downside is that we can't make as many sudden changes as you could in 2D. So 2D has you drawing, has you given greater possibility for all kinds of changes, but you have to commit to drawing all of them and tracking all of them. With CG, it's a lot easier to be able to track everything, but you have a much limited pool of options to be able to work with. So a term that's used often in CG is reuse. I mean, it's used in animation, but CG especially will capitalize on reuse, which is us reusing previous assets from previous episodes of a show or moments in a film or however. And everybody loves when you reuse stuff.
Yeah, it's so true.
I got
You'll get brownie
really good at
points.
that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your TD is going to thank you for being like, hey, can we use this? Can we reuse this cart from episode one in episode eight? Absolutely. We don't have to build new stuff. Use it as much as you want, you know?
Yeah, that's so funny.
You were talking a little bit before about using different people on your team, like leaning into their individual skill sets. Can you think of an example off the top of just like a time that you've gotten a scene or a couple of scenes and realized like, oh, like this is how I should divide it up because this person is, good at that thing or this thing.
Oh yeah, absolutely. One of the shows that I was working on was a really great example is us working on Wings of Fire. So there were sections where several of the board artists that were working for me, like a great example is Amelia that was working for me, Amelia Kasten. She was really great at being able to emote with these kinds of like greater expressions. So I loved seeing that kind of stuff. So I would give her a lot of really great acting moments where it came to her being able to show all of the nuance in these kinds of interactions between multiple characters or in single scenes. Like she could bring out the drama for a lot of these characters, which was super awesome. One of my other board artists, Madison Dunn, he was getting a little bit more of his feet wet when it came to boarding, but he had such an expansive view of wanting to be able to use the set. So when I prompted him, like, hey, I want you to capitalize on moving everybody around. And he's like, you got it. And he just ran with the assignment, you know? Really, which is awesome to see. And especially like on Gremlins, a lot of my revisions artists have such great acting chops. You know, even though you're working in revisions, you still are a board artist. There's really in position, right? There is a difference, but when it comes to skill set, you have to bring just as much skill as any board artist that's working directly from the script when you're putting all of this stuff together. So it was just such a pleasure to be able to see so many folks just really acing it, you know?
Yeah, I think, yeah, that's so cool when you get to see like your team like grow and do like awesome work too. It's like so satisfying.
Having said that, is that something that you would ever fold into giving advice about people's portfolios or reels, like figuring out the things that you're strongest at and like and really highlighting them? Or is that something that you looked out for when, if you're ever in a situation where you're trying to hire someone to balance out a team?
I could definitely say that I was looking for somebody that was able to bring balance to a team. In some cases, you want to look for a lot of folks that will think the same. In some cases, you'll look for folks that tend to think a little bit differently or can bring like a healthy contrast to your storyboarding team. But something that I've noticed that myself and a lot of fellow directors can tend to look for is we really want to see what voice you are going to bring to the project. So we are hiring on the basis of you know how to do this job. So Seeing storyboard sequences is always great. Being able to see what you guys can do with characters, technical camera moves, all of that stuff is always great. What needs to sing is your storytelling voice. What do you like to see in film? Do you like stuff that's more cinematic? Are you really great at comedy? Do you love these kinds of punchlines? Do you like adding effects to your work? How does that translate? That kind of stuff we're definitely looking for when it comes to hiring. So highlighting the stuff you like helps you
Honestly,
get a clear view of who you are.
that's such a good advice because it even though it's like also really hard kind of advice to hear, because a lot of the time I feel like when you're still in school, you're like, I can do anything. Please hire me for anything.
What do you want? What do you want me to be?
I remember this level of desperation,
I can smell it. I can smell it on the portfolios.
Because you want to be in this industry so bad. You've been studying, you've been doing your best, you've learned all the techniques and everything, and you're like, hey, here's the proof of what I can do. It's like, the reason I'm talking to you is because I am assuming you know how to do this. So if half the conversation is just reiterating what I already know, you want to maximize on the time of talking about you. Why are you important for me to have? Something that is easily missed in school is that kind of business sense, right? Especially as artists. We're like, if I draw well enough, somebody's gonna say yes. And it's like, so technically, that could be true, but you can't sit and depend on that happening. You need to make whatever you're experiencing happen, you know? What you
No,
need, gotta make it happen.
that's so true. And I feel like I've also kind of learned that all over again as I kind of ventured into like pitching ideas and having generals with execs, because they're kind of like, they're like, so tell me a little bit about you. And you're like, oh, but then you have to give them the whole spiel of like, hey, I love, like, I don't know, Michael Bay movies and big action crazy shows. And then they're like, oh, okay, so now this can be a person that we can talk to if we have ever a project that's like a big action project or whatever. But they want to know what box to put you in. And that's kind of, I've resorted to kind of pitch myself as I'm comedy first and heart second. So people are like, okay, it's going to be funny and there's going to be some emotions if we work with that person. But it takes so much time to figure out who you are, right?
Yes, absolutely. Like, I knew that I liked being able to do action. Action is so much fun. I grew up with like bread and butter, Batman the Animated Series, Superman the Animated Series, classic Spider-Man, X-Men, like love those shows, ate them up. I mean, even down to Freakazoid. Like I love all as everything superhero was so much fun. But really actually coming in and seeing how much it takes to be able to do action, I had to have a point to come to, you know, terms with myself, being like, is this how much I want to do? Is this the kind of action I want to do? And or what kind of action would I want to do? Do I want to translate it? And how do I make it meaningful? That was something big that I still sell as part of my kind of wheelhouse, is I like being able to add acting into action. So you get to see so much of the character even as they're doing judo flips and all kinds of stuff, you know? Yeah. So like, because there is, honestly, we broke it down and there is supposed to be a difference between Captain America punching somebody and Black Panther punching somebody. There's a total difference about how they do it, you know?
That is so cool. Yeah, let's like deep
That's
down into
so
acting.
interesting. How would you like, I for anybody looking at the canvas, is there a way that you can like sort of visually explain how, like for that particular example, like how do you think about doing that? Like, is it in the pose? Is it in what they're saying? Is it like how do you break that down, like the personality behind the punch? Like,
The
that's such a
personality,
cool
right?
idea.
Yeah,
We get.
well, like, especially when it comes to like, let me see if I can have somebody over here. But especially when it comes to like, Captain America tends to stand very solid, right? He will lean into the punch if he's. So when it comes to like, really great example is always jumping. So people flying or jumping always do it totally different. Unless they've learned it from somebody specifically. So, like when it comes to Invincible, the way that he flies mimics the way that his dad flies, right? Because his dad is the Superman of that world. So Nolan tends to fly really strong, huge chest, right? Hips, his legs are totally straight and long. He has his big arms that come full forward as he flies. As his dad with his big old mustache. And his hair is windswept, but he's strong superhero type coming in, right? Mark tends to do it the same way. He will fly pretty straight. He will have his arms up, and he tends to fly punch first. You can mix it with Nolan in different times, but Mark is planning on blasting through something. So when he flies as strong as his dad did, right? When it comes to like the difference between Captain America, Black Panther, Spider-Man, right? All three of them, different ages, different cultures, they all jump differently. Captain America will tend to use, and all of them can use different types of props or however, but Cap will usually jump. He has a habit of jumping pretty strong. So he has strong legs. He's got, super serum body. So he will, and he's terrestrial most of the time. So he will jump straight down. He will have his shield with him that he's always got as he's jumping. But that's different than Black Panther, who is much more animalistic. So when he jumps, he's much more crouched, head forward so he can see everything, arms back, butt claws out, and he tends to have his legs tucked so that way he can land properly.
Ooh,
Right?
that's
This is so
cool.
cool. That is so
This is
cool.
stuff that we take for granted so much. Like, because you just see the drawings and you're like, oh, they just drew the drawing. It just happened to be that way. But there's intent behind all these poses.
There's always intent behind the poses. And like, Spider-Man is trying to get somewhere fast enough. Like, for each one of these superheroes, it's especially bread and butter having this for like most of my lifetime. So, like, I know, King of Wakanda, he's always in charge. He's wanting to get stuff taken care of and he's super smart and everything. So he's super fearless versus like Cap is strong and he's a symbol for everybody. So he's always chest out. So that he's here to help you kind of a thing versus Peter, who is this kind of young kid, right? Especially in later versions. He's
Yeah,
just.
there's this little bit of a sense of humor about him.
Exactly. So he's always trying to get somewhere fast enough. So he will often have legs first because that's the stickiest and longest part of him
Oh, nice.
that will be able to reach something as his hands are busy web swinging.
I feel like there's so many good opportunities for him to flopping around in precarious, ridiculous, because he's
Oh, yeah.
flexible. He's flopping through the air, doing like somersaults, things like that.
Absolutely. Something that was super big on my social medias, and I still do it. I need to post more, but my basics were always having Spider-Man flipping. So like he would often a lot of my drawings would be upside down, right? He's got legs this way, legs here, like he's always flipping upside down, or he's about to do like different handstands and things because he is. You're totally right. He is a super flexible, always trying to rush as fast as he can, no matter how he looks. What's important is Spider-Man needs to get there. Because it's especially like when you think about it as part of his character, the roughest moment in his life is when he loses his uncle, right? We all know the story of Uncle Ben, but he wasn't fast enough. And then it happens with, and unfortunately happens with girlfriends he has, with friends he has. It's a constant that we see in like Spider-Verse and all kinds of things where, you know, Spider-Man's always trying to get there. He's trying to help. He tries so hard that it shows in how he moves. No matter what part of him is forward, whatever it is trying to reach for whatever.
Like that dream where you're always late for class or something. Like he's always late for class.
Which is,
He's missing something, you know?
it's so, yeah, that's kind of like his whole shtick, right? Because he's trying to be a normal person on top. He has like the double identity thing going on where he's like trying to hide that he's a superhero and he's just trying to be a regular person, which is like, I think, very relatable and probably why he's one of everybody's favorite superheroes. Yeah,
Yeah,
that's
I
who who's
especially like,
yours?
oh.
I was definitely about to agree that he's such a relatable, likable hero because he is having the same problems as we're having, right? As much as he's got all these superpowers and he's fighting these crazy villains and everything, he's still Peter Parker in a suit. He's still a guy just trying so hard to do the right thing. He
Isn't
wants
that
to help so bad, and he wants to do it in a way that is beneficial to the people he cares about. That's all we're asking to be able to do, you know?
That's so true. I was gonna say real fast. Isn't that like what all of us regular Joes going to work in this capitalistic world? We're just trying to hold it all together, be work at the on the right time, and take care of the kids and doing it all.
Yeah.
Just like Spider-Man. He's very relatable in that sense.
Exactly. You know, he's just trying to live his life too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sean, are you gonna
Oh yeah,
ask
the question.
the
What do you have a favorite superhero, and is it the same one that you like drawing the most?
I mean, technically yes, but this is definitely a divisive topic for comic nerds, you know, who's your favorite hero kind of a thing. It'll it for me definitely differs between the two great houses, right? Between DC and Marvel, but in both cases, on total opposites of the society spectrum, I love Batman and I love Spider-Man.
Oh, that's so funny. But
Oh my
it's
God.
true. I think you know what? They're the most famous, at least. 'Cause like I remember the time of my life when I knew nothing about superheroes before like all the big Marvel movies, the big blockbuster Marvel movies. And Batman and Spider-Man were definitely the only two that I knew. Like I so yeah. They've got cool designs. Batman has such a cool design. He's so fun to draw.
He's so fun to draw. He's so fun to draw with his cape and everything.
And you can
But
simplify him in fun ways because of his cape. You can almost turn him into okay, I feel like drawing him like he's just a rectangle. Like he's a
yes.
rectangle because of his cape. And I think you can stylize him in like simple shapes in a very fun way.
That is so true. Just also the little ears. And oh my gosh, have you guys watched the Batman Spider-Man by Small
Dude,
Boo?
I
It's
love Batman Spider-Man.
my favorite thing ever.
I don't think I've seen this. What is
Oh,
this?
I cannot wait to hear your
okay. Yeah,
reaction when you watch
we'll send it
this.
to you. It's
Yeah.
like a parody, but like sort of only in that they have similar character designs, but it's like the stupidest possible things that you could do with them. And it's very loose, fun animation. It's very absurdist. When we were younger, it was like, I mean, it used to just crack me up every
I
time. The
would just
animation
like,
is so fun.
yeah, I would cry laughing. It's like, imagine if you had like a 6-year-old child that was like a genius animator and just animated their fanfic of Batman Spider-Man. Pretty much, that's pretty much that. That's pretty much what it is.
That sounds incredible. That sounds
It's
incredible.
so funny. That's so funny. So you've worked mostly on superhero shows. Have you ever kind of like had your own ideas, characters, like worlds that you wanted to develop? And if yes, like what kind of worlds are you interested in?
Yeah, I mean, definitely with that kind of overactive imagination, you've got a ton of different worlds and folks that you've come up with in different ways. But something that I like gravitating towards is a sense of adventure. So having a world with a bit of mystery about it is always so fun because it's great to have a character that's wanting to go out in search of the mystery, even if, when it comes to like being able to work on Gremlins is a great example because there's a ton there. Gremlins had a ton of mystery when it came to discovering about the Mogwai and the rules and what this meant, what kind of magic is here, and all of that. And you get to see so much through the eyes of Sam, where both Sam and Elle, as they're traveling around with Gizmo, what new fantastical myths and legends that they could interact with. So, you know, I've got some stuff that I have cooking up, different ideas and things. You know, animation folks can be cagey about their personal ideas kind of stuff.
For sure.
But like, you know, that's another thing that's great about D&D is that it's a whole new medium to get to explore those kinds of greater stories and adventures and stuff where you're not over, you know, burning yourself out drawing. Like make up new stuff, but I don't think there's a case of turning storyboard brain off in a sense. You're always thinking about, you know, oh, this would be super cool to have as this kind of adventure, or especially when you're listening to music or a podcast or something, you're envisioning what it looks like, and oh, I do these camera angles and all kinds of stuff, you know.
What kind of music do you listen to get inspired to like bored?
Oh man. It can be so all over the place. I'm so bad about that. Like, but I've got Spotify and, you know, YouTube Music playlists and all kinds of stuff. Definitely during Marvel's Spider-Man, where we had Peter, who's young, going to Horizon High kind of a thing. I liked listening to the brand new, at the time, brand new Spider-Man PS4 soundtrack. It just, I love that game so much, but
It had really good reviews. Honestly, it looked so fun to
it's an
play.
incredible game. But I loved listening to that and Sam Raimi Spider-Man, and you know, like a lot of the film instrumental soundtracks, and then especially that game, because it's just, it helps you remember the optimism and the hope that he brings just when you're down and out, stuff is crazy, you don't know what to do, it's all exploding around you. And Peter Parker, when everything hits the fan, when there's nothing else left to give, he's like, if no one can give something, I'm giving it. And it's like, yeah! Like you just get so jazzed.
Well, I so a lot of the time when you're working listening to music, it sounds like you're finding stuff that gets you in the mood appropriate for that thing. Do you find yourself listening to a lot of things that are completely opposite of what you're boarding, or do you mainly like you're like, okay, I'm storyboarding a scene in a forest. Let's put on some lutes. Let's put on some wood elf kind of like.
Definitely. I try to look for stuff that helps me envision the story much more solidly. With a lot of boarding, you're used to going from a totally blank page, you know, perfect example what we're working with, but you're used to going from a totally blank page to drawings all over it. But the sequence is boarded in your head. So what you're trying to translate is from your head to paper, getting down as much detail from what you're imagining. So having anything that helps you clearly capture that thought for an extended period helps a ton. So yeah, listening to, like, I love Celtic fiddles when it comes to like Orris romps and adventure and stuff. I love listening to kind of cyberpunky grunge kind of stuff when it comes to labs and experiments and that kind of a sci-fi vibe. I love listening to extra heroics or that kind of fun adventure music when it comes to like doing stuff for Spider-Man or doing stuff for like Gremlins or Wings of Fire. Like, I love all that kind of stuff. So I definitely have it kind of fit the mood of what I'm trying to do to help me keep that thought long enough.
I was hoping that you would say that you listen to instrumental music.
It's a ton of instrumental. It's fun to be able to listen to songs and stuff. I just got back into listening to Scott Pilgrim versus the World. Did you guys watch that film?
Oh,
Michael
that's a
Cera and
good
stuff.
movie. Yeah, it's so
I
fun.
love that soundtrack. I know all the songs from that soundtrack and stuff.
Have
So
strong opinions about the new series?
the anime series, I haven't watched it yet. Have you seen it, Jess?
I've seen a couple of episodes. It's definitely much more of the anime vibe. So it feels a little bit more, it's pick and choose where the acting is the biggest. Because you have some softer moments where you don't need a lot of animation. You have some bigger moments where animation is really pumped and really needed. But I like it so far. Definitely the anime vibe.
Are
So.
you an anime fan at all? Do you watch anime a little bit?
Yeah, I definitely do. Grew up 90s kid, took to anime like a duck to water. Like, no, I've got tons of classics I love. Like, I feel like every 90s kid, when you're a kid in the 90s, you had Pokemon and Sailor Moon and Digimon and Yu-Gi-Oh, and you had no concept that that's a whole nother spectrum of animation. You're just like, it's all cartoons, you know?
That's so true. It's
You
so true.
can't even imagine that someday in a classroom, a teacher's gonna say, "Don't draw like this," or like.
Oh my gosh. Constantly. All of college was, I don't want to see any anime here. And it's like, but it's so good.
I think, okay, everybody listening, put in the comments if you have a teacher that told you not to draw anime, because I want to know if if the tide has turned. I want to know if now all of the old school teachers are like retired, and now it's all like millennials teaching, and the millennials are just kind of like, we love anime, you know? That's what I
I know.
wonder.
Oh my gosh. Wouldn't it be magical? What a world. Like, that
So let us
would
know in the
be.
comments your experience with drawing anime. That's so funny.
Yeah, I feel like there's always like a proving time. Like once the teacher sees that you draw anime, it's like they want you to run through a gauntlet to show them that you can draw other things besides anime, or else they feel like there's nothing they can do with you. So I always feel like there's like a little bit of like okay, like can you draw a dog walking? You know, but it doesn't have an anime face. Can you even draw that? You know?
Exactly. Can you draw anything but like spiky hair and all this
Yeah.
extra? And it's like, yes. Yeah, I know what this is. Like,
Gonna
I
draw an
understand
anime
what's
dog.
happening.
An anime dog. I feel like I remember though. I don't know if you guys have gone through this, but I feel like I do remember having to learn how to draw cartoony. Like I had to kind of like I knew the codes because I also grew up watching Looney Tunes and all of the like old school American cartoons. But you know, when you're really trying to push things to work on a show like similar to SpongeBob or like Gumball, like you really have to, I don't know, break the models in a way that I don't know is its own set of codes. It's just a tangent. I'm just going on my own little tangent.
I
That's
think
all
that's
right.
definitely like I think that's definitely valid because I remember having to be able to learn to draw specifically cartoony, which was fun in its own way, but I guess it's really easy to not realize you have to apply a different thought to
Yeah,
being able
right?
to draw like that. You know what I mean? Like,
Just a
it's
whole new set of
definitely
rules.
It's absolutely a whole new set of rules. Like the difference between drawing like The Simpsons, drawing like Dexter's Lab, drawing like Adventure Time, they're all 100% different styles of like CalArts rubber tube or like the Fleischer style, or even like through the eras of Disney, you don't relate to Snow White is not drawn the same as Ariel. You wouldn't think that. You're like, it's all Disney. It's like, it's not the same Disney.
It's
You know?
very different. The
Very
faces were,
different.
like the eyes are so much smaller and the proportion in the face are so different. It's so funny. It's so true. I love that Yu-Gi-Oh that you just drew. It's
It
amazing.
was Yugi. Do you have a style that was the hardest for you to learn? Speaking of learning how to draw different styles or like think in different style languages, do you have a style that was the hardest for you to learn, whether it was on a show or even outside of a show?
I will probably say actually the my style jump between working on Spider-Man and then suddenly working on Gremlins was very jarring because I was used to much more realistic proportions. Like a lot of superhero shows tend to be in semi-realism. You know, it's the same thing with like a ton of new action shows is that kind of semi-anime, more Western anime kind of a look, but it's all realistic proportions. Everybody's got muscles, clear muscles, like. But working on Gremlins, you're drawing kids 95% of the time or baby proportions, which was Gizmo. So
Jess, why is this kid so muscly?
I got that so often. Or, like, guys, you have to remember Gizmo's arms can't touch the top of his head. We kept
And
trying
they're
to do
not
that.
buff. He doesn't have biceps,
He
guys.
doesn't have biceps. He can't do push-ups. He can kind of pull himself up a little. Like,
Wait, was he like a Funko Pop proportion? No, his head was smaller, right?
and he was about like 2 to 2.5. So his head was pretty much the same proportion as the rest of his body. So he was like a one and
Whoa.
one, right? Or like his head was just a little bit smaller and his body was just a little bit bigger. But like his hands came up to midway up his eyes. He could never, and all of the Mogwai had that issue, right? So it's like,
So like try to put this guy's hat on. Give him a hat. Try to have him put it on.
you know,
You
or
won't be able
like,
to.
hey, can we have Gizmo pop up on this box? It's like, if you can find a creative way that he gets there. So there's a lot of Gizmo jumping places. But like, even Sam and L, when they're moving around and doing different things, they have kid proportions. Their heads are big, their eyes are much bigger, their arms are only so long. Like, you know, they can't lift stuff in the same way. They have to
Even
do,
lifts, bro.
I mean, yeah, you know, like it's definitely, I'm trying.
That's always an interesting thing that I noticed that some writers on shows run into is they end up writing a lot of situations that the character can't do. Like there's a whole lot of like, have him touch his hat and put his hat on and adjust his hat and like if the character can't reach his head, you're like, can you please stop putting hat jokes in?
Exactly. Like, we can't do these jokes, guys. You have to take them out, you know?
I once had a character that was supposed to tie his shoelace, but it was one of those like little chibi cute characters that have no clothes.
And so it's like, what am I supposed to do with this?
He's tying his feet hair.
Exactly. It's like I don't know what to do. It's so funny. Oh my God. Yeah, like learn yeah, drawing in a different style is so tough.
Yeah, it was really it was a kind of jarring experience, but a fun one, to be able to like have that kind of a new challenge of, okay, so how am I supposed to tackle what this kid looks like? How does his backpack fit? How is he going to operate around the world? You know, like it was a lot of different challenges to go over, but a ton of fun. I had a great time.
Yeah, the show looks great too. Man. Yeah, same team. Like a lot of the people went over to Wings too after.
Yeah, Vaughn and a ton of folks went over. It was a good time while we had it.
I know,
Yeah.
right? This is like our series of episodes where we just reminisce about Wings.
Right,
We got Mike
exactly.
Gerald
And
and
then
then,
I'm
oh
like,
yeah,
wasn't it
Gerald,
so
yep.
fun when we were all on
It
Wings?
was
I'm
all
like, I remember it too. I'm just
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah.
and you're like stolen valor. You're like, shut up, Sean.
But talking about Gremlins, our patron Mallard asks if there is anything that you keep in mind when working on big established franchises like Gremlins, or if your work process and flow are the same as an original project that people haven't seen before.
I would say there's definitely a lot of stuff that you have to keep in mind, very much so, about something that's established. There's usually specific rules about how these characters will act or specific things to include. Like for Gremlins, we had to be really smart about water
Oh
everywhere,
yeah.
not just with CG issues, with fur textures and things getting wet and whatever, but the rules of how water relates to these characters. Gizmo doesn't want to get wet. Vehemently
It's
doesn't
like
want
you
to get
realize the whole
wet.
scene is raining and you're like, oh shit.
Oh shoot. So like so your first thing for Gizmo to do, Gizmo has to find some cover. He has to find some cover, or he is in Sam's backpack the whole time. Like it's very, we had that happen in an episode where it was pouring rain. Somebody pulls out an umbrella and it still has holes in it, and so they have to get somewhere dry because Gizmo can't get wet. Like, but there's a lot of similarities between me working on original projects and established projects when it comes to, like I said before, characters having specific acting notes that should differentiate from who they are to what they're going to, who they're going to be relating to. Elle acts differently than Sam. Gizmo doesn't act like either of the kids. In Wings of Fire, we had several different dragons. They should all act differently. When you have a cast of characters, it's the same thing in live action. Unless specifically noted, everybody's going to act differently. Even your extras are going to act differently. So that's a lot of what you keep in mind when you're storyboarding for animation.
How often do you think of that in terms of like what's this character's motivation, like as a tool to ha like figure out how they're approaching the scene? Or is it more of a just like what is this character's default way of acting for you?
You probably end up doing both. I know that I do. In a weird way, you envision you sitting down with these as real people and being like, okay, so how do you act? You kind of, you, Star Wars can put on their own kind of acting caps in a way of being like, I'm an actor. How would I go about this scene as this person? And you kind of think through it in that kind of a fashion,
That's so true. I feel like that sometimes like it's hard as a board artist to be able to act out all these different characters. It's also a lot of fun, but I don't know if you guys have ever gotten to know, but sometimes I have like a very specific, like fine-tuned acting in my head, and then which involved like a character trying to put on a face and to smile in order to hide that they were upset. And then the directress was like, "Why is she smiling? It looks like she's being a bit like a like got that
If
comment."
you sent this emoji, I would be confused.
And I was just like, man, like my heart's like, I was like, that's not, she's not being mean. She's just trying to be strong. I was so sad.
Exactly. Like, I'm just trying to relate this to you. But
Yeah, so
yeah,
funny.
I've definitely gotten acting notes where I've gotten a ton of acting notes where somebody's like, these people are too smiley. And it's like, it's awkward. Like, what do you do in an awkward situation? You don't just like jitter awkwardly. You're trying to like, it's fine. Let's not ask about how bad this is.
And but it's hard to like make a face because that's like this universal language where you can understand how a person's feeling, and a lot of drawing and jokes and like trying to get acting across is about like trying to like dummy proof it a little bit, like that the most possible people will understand this emotion. How often when you get a note like that, do you try to figure out a way to save that, or do you always completely pivot? Like for instance, like if you had a character who was smiling, kind of gritting their teeth through a situation, do you pitch a version where they have a little bit of an eyelid twitch, or like a little tear in the corner of their eye, but they're smiling? Or like do you ever try to save it, or most of the time do you just like all right, different route completely?
I guess it definitely depends on the character, but I will try to. I like being able to put in that kind of subtle acting. So having those kinds of like eye twitches, or like somebody kind of like rolls their shoulders a little, or somebody kind of has like a little bit of a hot foot trying to be like, I want to get out of this moment, you know?
We cut to the Arthur fist, like you just cut down there with the fist at his side.
Yeah,
I'll
just
just
so
insert this shot.
yeah, right? It's like, but I like one of the things that I feel proud to say about my own work is that I love being able to do really nail facial expression. So I like having characters talking, characters being snarky, characters, you know, sweating it out or being inquisitive or however. That's a lot of the stuff that I love doing. So pushing that kind of subtle acting, I've definitely grown throughout my career being able to push it the most, but that's one of my favorite things to be able to do. And, you know, no matter the situation, if we have a close-up of somebody's face, I like having that level of clarity that you know what they're thinking.
I'd like to see an animator competition where the prompt is given, it's a like a super complex emotion, and then three people have to take the same like model or the same face and try to draw that emotion. I feel like that would be interesting because people
Yeah.
ex draw those emotions very differently. I feel like that would be funny to see.
That's so true.
That would be super neat. Yeah, definitely. 'Cause, you know, you get that from like different comic artists too. Like anybody that is drawing a person or any character, right? Even like down to, you know, even across to like animal characters for like, you know, Fox and the Hound or all kinds of different comics or however, like even to Gizmo, you know, this little guy has a huge range of emotion he does, right? And you want to bring that out. So seeing how different people would treat the same character doing different things would be super cool.
Yeah, that would be fun to see. I do feel like, you know, you see that in directors as well, how they choose to portray like tragedy or comedy, and everybody has a style to kind of elicit these emotions in their writing, but also in their characters. We have a question from Ink KG on Instagram who asks, what's it like directing, and did you have a favorite project that you enjoyed directing? So I guess maybe can you tell us a little bit about like the day-to-day of a director's life?
Well, the joke is that you have a ton of meetings, but but it's about half, I will say a healthy half creative, and then the other half is managerial. You know, you're in charge of a bunch of folks that are trying to do their jobs really well and trying to build the story that you are trying to that you're trying to build with you. So wrangling in that kind of collaboration is part of the job. Also helping to steer the ship, as it were, with your own creative process and what you like to see is also part of it. So, like, average day to day would definitely depend on the project, but for the most part, you're talking between relevant departments. You're having, especially for story, you're having a breakdown of this is what we need to tackle. This is what we're trying to get from the scene. Here are your guys' sections. I like having one-on-ones with my board artists to be like, hey, why don't you talk through with me what you'd like to do for this scene? Because that's something I like doing with my own directors. So I like being able to give my board artists the chance to talk out ideas and have it where I'm like, hey, actually, yes, let's go ahead and go through with this idea. I'd love to see what you're going to do with it. Or this helps to maximize on the time they have, because we all have to follow the schedule. You know, slaves to the schedule, you gotta slaves to deadlines. This helps to keep folks on track to be like, I can see where you want to go with this, but this is how I'd like this broken down a little bit more. Let's lean a little bit more towards this way, you know? Yeah. So that's a lot of like the day-to-day with me for the most part.
I have a great question from Instagram by Cashman Dimps. who asks, "It feels so rare that I see people that look like me in leadership positions in the animation industry. Are there any challenges that come with being a Black woman animation director? If so, how have you overcome that struggle?"
I've definitely gotten this question often.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the case with the territory. There's a really great saying that I ended up getting from several folks that were working with me on at Marvel, folks that were working on the different projects there, is that yes, there are certain things that allow you to be able to get in the door, but you still have to show up. So I've been very fortunate to have be in a position and in different productions where I haven't had to struggle as much when it came to someone questioning what I'm capable of outside of me showing them this is the work that I do. So when it comes to being hired for a myriad of different reasons, you know, yes, there can be opportunities that open up because of diversity, which is great. Being able to have that opened up to a lot of folks is awesome. Doing the job well is going to be what allows you to shine the most and to really push past those kinds of barriers that you could possibly come up against. In my case, especially being female in action, I love this kind of stuff. So that is what I wanted and did bring to the table is, hey, I love seeing these superheroes kicking butt and taking names. I love adventure and seeing the world and being able to open up with these stories. Here's my work that reflects that kind of stuff. And they're like, wow, this work is great. And that's what I want somebody to focus on.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Do you feel as though like working remotely has altered any of that, like them seeing the work before they see you sometimes, or do you feel like it's pretty much the same because they whatever can see your name and whatever?
I think that it's changed the game a little bit. A lot of folks will see your work before they actually see you, which means that your work really needs to shine at that point.
Sure.
But when it comes to you being able to collaborate with somebody else, that's what you, when you show up at that point, that's what you really need to bring to the table. So remote work has had its own challenges with being able to collaborate a little bit more with
Sure.
other folks. But it's had its own perks as well. And I'm someone that really likes being social. So I like being able to put forth the effort of, like, hey, just checking in with you guys. How are things looking for revisions? Do you guys want us to be able to take care of that? Hey, just checking in about my sequence to let you know, my director or supervisor director, whoever, this is what I'm working on. I will have it to you by this point. That will meet deadline. Great, that sounds awesome. You know, it's just a little bit extra effort to chime in with folks, but that's been more of the major challenge is keeping up with that level of communication.
Sure. Well, that's a very thoughtful answer. And I want to pivot to something slightly less serious. I have a prompt for us. And I want to play this game with you guys. If you go to the next page, the prompt is awkwardly flirting with your crush, but your mouth is numb from the dentist.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
So I figured maybe we all draw ourselves.
Okay, cool.
Is
That's
that
so
okay?
funny. Let's
Yes.
see how this goes. Let's see how this goes. Let me see.
And we all draw ourselves trying to flirt. That's so funny.
Man, it's now on the spot thinking through, you know,
It's
how would this
hard, yeah.
person do?
I mean, you can always do something and erase it. It's all right.
Or a little improv bit on the pod. I want to reload the jam board. It's like playing a little.
This one is for all the people watching on YouTube.
Yeah. If you're listening on Spotify, make sure you check out the pod on the YouTubes. Let me see. We have a question from Joe Benson while we're like drawing all of this, who asks, well, he asks about Invincible and if it was difficult, because you didn't design for Invincible, you designed for a previous show. On Invincible, you did boards.
Yes, I did boards on Invincible. Invincible was definitely its own interesting challenges. Because, yes, of how established the characters were, but how, what I really love about Invincible is how purposeful the action is. Things that are happening in this world happen in history. It's much different than working on Avengers, where, yes, we blow up New York like every other episode. But everybody seems to just forget about how dangerous it is to live in New York with supervillains everywhere, or like Norse gods coming in with giant ships, or however, you know. In Invincible, all of the heroics and all of the action affects these characters and who they are as people, how they relate to their friends. The greatest example is the hero of the story is Mark, who, through him becoming a superhero, realizing things about his family and about heroism in general across the world and how it's handled, he starts to discover how he wants to relate to it and how it will affect him. Certain levels of trauma and drama that happened to him in his life. That's so fascinating, but challenging to tackle how much gravitas that has. So those were, I really liked those kinds of challenges because I hadn't explored that before in an assignment.
Yeah, it's so cool. I feel like there's just so much there's just so much like drama to explore and like complex themes in Invincible. God, this prompt is killing me.
I was thinking about like indicating something if you can only use the eyes to do it, and like because we do rely on mouths a lot, but you can also tell what someone is feeling by their eyes a lot of the time. It's just more subtle, so I think that it's a little difficult, but
This is very cute.
I love that you have hearts on your cheeks, Sean. Like you just gotta like went all out with the makeup for this one.
Yeah, I'm figuring out, do I want hearts in my eyes or maybe hearts on my cheeks or the way I'm gonna go? I was trying to figure out how I wanna.
While we keep drawing this crazy prompt, we have another question from YouTube. At Nova underscore Scotia has asked about two things, but I'll go with the second question first. Who in your life has been supportive through your art endeavors? I think that's really a really sweet question.
Yeah, that's always a sweet one. My mom, my late mom, was the biggest supporter in my life when it came to investing in art, especially my decision to be able to go to college and everything. My dad was really supportive, and it stinks that there's a lot of folks whose parents aren't as supportive about getting into art. I was super fortunate, and my grandparents, especially when I talked them through, this is what I really love, this is what I want to do, and I'm very passionate about it. When you really show your conviction when it comes to the things that you want to do, an environment that really cares for you and wants you to succeed, if you show the passion that you have, like in my case, I showed the passion of this is what I'm meant to do, this is what I want to do, and I'm going to work so hard at being able to do it. My family was like, we believe you and we want to support you. And that meant the world to me. It was really amazing to be able to have that.
That's so
And
sweet.
you know, now I've got my husband. We're going to celebrate our 1 year anniversary, which is going to be awesome.
Yeah, let's
Yeah.
go.
But I have my husband and his family that were that like me coming down for that tour to Marvel and being able to be here as I'm trying to find a house and stuff. His family was like, hey, you can come stay with us and we will help you as you are figuring out this animation thing. I'm like, this is awesome. You know,
Oh, that rules. That is so
I
cool.
had a really great support network and I'm so grateful and thankful for the people that I have in my life.
Wow, that's so sweet. I love it.
I could go through like a long list of people to thank, being able to thank my brother for helping me out, like all of this extra stuff, you know?
Oh man, yeah, it's so true because support doesn't only come through just like encouragement or like money, but it comes through all these little things with like, oh yeah, we can like kind of like show you around town or like welcome to this new place that you don't really know, or like all of these sweet kind of like other fun ways of making you feel like you're at home and like welcome in a new uncharted space. And I feel like we can kind of go over that last question from Nova Scotia because we kind of hinted at it at the beginning of the episode, but they say that your artwork heavily reminds me of D&D. Have you ever played a campaign before? Obviously you have, but
To
like
answer that,
Yeah.
yes. Yeah, if people looking at my stuff end up seeing my paladin, actually, that I've been for 9 years, I think. She's the best. She's my favorite person. But like everybody falls in love with their D&D characters.
So
But
true.
yeah, I love being able to play D&D and like especially mentioning those kinds of alternative storytelling games like Kids on Bikes and Dread and different stuff like that. I love all that stuff because it does. It gets your storyboard brain going, it gets your juices flowing about it, where you're thinking of how would this character react to what's happening to them? What do they think is important? What happens if they're not successful at something, you know?
Yeah. Do you feel like you play characters that are similar to you or like the opposite of you?
I probably play a lot of characters that are similar to me, I will say, in the vein of I play a lot of characters that really have a strong drive to succeed or to be able to help someone or to be accepted by their friends to show that they care. I have a lot of characters that tend to do that. I have a monk that she's a bit of a goofball. She drinks a little too much, you know, that kind of stuff. But she really tries to help her friends. She really wants them to be safe and be taken care of. And so she kind of makes that a little bit more her job. Even in NPCs that I'll build for different games for friends or however, I'll have those kinds of things in NPCs is, that kind of drive to succeed, even in villains,
Oh, yeah.
you know, where you get like, no matter the cost, because my need to succeed is so much more important, that kind of stuff, you know?
I love that. Yeah, that's very heroic. Super heroic.
Yeah. If there's an excuse to be a fantasy superhero, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like I always play like lunatics.
But that's like the comedy in it, right? Isn't that
Yeah, I'm like, I
what's
don't
even
know.
fun? Like,
I love being like a tool who's just
yeah.
like a goblin or something that's just like
I like giving myself like big faults. Like I just play like a big drawbacks to my character that affect my performance. So like in the last one I played, we played a sci-fi one where I was a character who was a gunslinger, but the twist was that I'm a cyborg and my head is a gun. And but I get sick a lot. And then when I sneeze, my gun just goes off. So like we'll be in the middle of like trying to sneak somewhere or like whatever, and like and my gun goes off and it makes everyone laugh and you know whatever, but like and I always had my voice changer and it was queued up with gun noises so that I could like sneeze and like shoot like a big shotgun blast and they could all hear it. But I like that kind of stuff where there maybe you have a powerful character but there's like a funny way that they are dysfunctional.
That they're kind of translated and stuff. Oh, that's fun. That's fun. I love that.
Man, yeah, that's so fun. Wow, those drawings are really coming along.
This is great.
It's so scary. Such a scary page.
If anybody at home listening wants to try the prompt too, I would love to see what your drawings look like. And if you're a Patreon on the Discord, I want to see those drawings. I want to see you try this prompt along with us. Again, it's awkwardly flirting with your crush, but your mouth is numb from the dentist.
It's just funny to think of because it's definitely a little bit of body acting, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Where you're like, since you can't say anything, how does your body do it? Like, mine is totally envisioning, I have to tell them now that I think that they're cute. So it's like, but trying to smile, so it's like, ha, you know?
It's like you're overcompensating way too hard because you can't do the mouth thing normally.
Yes, absolutely.
And V's is just leaning forward like a
I
sociopath, like
love
see, let's see how close I can get my face to you, you know?
these eyes. I love these eyes of being like, don't
Yeah, and
I
it's absolutely awful. It's like, please, like, I don't know, run away. It's your
I
last moment, last
I
minute
can
alive.
I can imagine this character V that you drew at being somebody that just heard some sort of saying or a poem about how like your true love, they should be able to look in your eyes and see your soul and tell them without any words how you feel. And so you're like trying to make them see your eyes as open as you can.
As
Like,
wide as possible.
look and dive into my eyes and deep into my pool of truth so that you can understand my emotion.
Right? Sean, I love yours because it's got this almost like come hither. Like this is a solid look to be like, oh yeah, they're definitely gonna come over and like start flirting with me.
Partway through, I realized how hard it was to draw a hand that looks like you're wiggling the fingers like this.
Yeah.
I was like, dude, what have I gotten myself into? This looks crazy.
But I love it. I love it.
Oh my God, that's so funny. Oh, wow, love languages, y'all. See, this is how you know. So you've learned just by watching this episode and listening to us talk about animation, you've also learned how to awkwardly flirt in three different ways.
In three different ways. It's all about body language, guys.
No, we haven't put the results of flirting like this. We don't see the reactions. I'm not, this isn't how to flirt successfully. This is just how three ways to emote flirting without using your mouth.
It's three possible ways.
It's three possible ways, but this is perfect character acting. It's particular to each character.
And you'll notice that like there really is three very different ways of expressing flirting, like body poses, like it's not just everybody just winking, or it's not everybody like doing the same thing. Like we in your minds, you each approach this emotion so differently, and I think it's really interesting.
Yeah, it's so funny.
Well, thank you for playing along with me. When I can't, I used to do this all the time, but then I realized how hard it was to keep up coming up with games for every creative block. I was in my try hard phase of like trying to prove myself on the show, and I would like try to come up with a game each time. But every once in a while, we just come up with one in the middle of the show, and I don't know. I like getting a chance to draw with you guys, because this is how my love language is drawing. This is how I communicate with people. This is how I make most of my jokes. And so, I feel just drawing this picture with you guys, feel a little bit more connected to you.
Aw,
Oh, that is so
that's so
sweet.
cute.
That is, what is it in actual love languages? I think there is quality time. Sean's love
Quality
language is
time.
quality time.
Quality time. I very much agree. Yeah, I feel like that can be a lot of cases, especially with the I like being able to do that. Just looping it to directing. I like being able to do that as a director because that allows for everybody to kind of be on the same page with the level of creativity you want to be, but you get to see different treatments like this, like different treatments of the same idea, but they all feel like they add up to
Yeah.
to the concept, you know?
Right now I'm directing, and when I hand off a file, sometimes on a layer below, like something that you can't see because there's something blocking it, I'll draw something funny to see if the artist ever sees it. Like I'll sneak in little things to the drawing to try to make my people laugh, and I don't know, that's I like it.
You leave little Easter eggs in the file, so that's so
Like
cute.
in the margins and stuff. I love that stuff.
Yeah, I feel like I'm so basic. I'm kind of more like words of affirmation. So I'm just like, when somebody turns in something really cool, I'm like, oh, I
Hang
love
in
all of
there.
these things. Yeah, I'm like, I love this that you did this specific little acting choice, and I like how you drew this thing. It's so funny.
It's all it's sharing that kind of level of positivity, right?
Yeah.
Like, hey, you should feel good about the good stuff you did do. I may have notes, but what you did, this part's awesome. Like, you
Yeah,
know?
yeah,
Yeah.
yeah. Do you experience creative block, Jess? And if you do, what do you do? How do you deal with
I do, definitely. Sometimes,
it?
I mean, we all experience burnout. Sometimes you just get to a point where, and I've said this before, where like your CPU, your processor is just overheated. You just can't keep churning out new ideas, you know? So I like turning to, I mean, like even with basic stuff of turning to like films that I like, rewatching those and remembering the things that I like about them, and then trying to capitalize on that. Sometimes I do draw, just doodling anything. And I tend to sketch in pen primarily. I don't really sketch in pencil. It's much more permanent and makes you have to be purposeful. So I usually work that way when it comes to my thumbnails, when it comes to personal sketching or however. But sometimes I just do a new storytelling hobby. Like, I like writing stories with friends, or I use prepping for D&D campaigns to kind of just get creative juices flowing. You know, I think that it's very healthy to have alternative creative hobbies where you're not doing your usual job. We like this is our job, you know? So we're doing this day in, day out. And when you come home, just like a mechanic, sometimes you don't want to work on a car. You know, sometimes you just want to come home and watch TV. You don't want to do, even though you love it, sometimes you don't want to do it in your spare time too. And so having a different outlet is great. It's super healthy for you to have, even like working out and doing, you know, socializing with friends or however. But one of my favorites is to write or do an alternative medium. So, like doing, you know, creating minis for games or just sculpting on my own, working with traditional mediums or just writing.
Yeah, it was all great. Yeah. I love that too. I feel like, yeah, it's a nice way to kind of like stretch your legs a little bit, and feel like you don't feel too guilty for completely giving up on the drawing during the blog because you're still being creative.
Exactly. You know, like it there's been different pieces of advice that have all kind of sounded the same that I've gotten. And it's if you are doing something else, your mind is working through the problem that you're going through in the background. So if I hit a wall with boarding, which I've done plenty of times. It's not a perfect process. You don't just get the script and you're like, okay, cool. I did the exact thing I wanted. Everyone says yes, and it goes right through, you know? Sometimes you're doing it multiple times, or you don't understand 100% what your director is trying to get you to do, or what the writers or supervising directors trying to get you to do. So you got to take a step back, go do something around the house, go write in your spare time, listen to music. Do something else actively. And then suddenly you have that moment where you're like, that's what I wanted to do. And you come right back and you just blaze through it, you know?
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
So true. That's amazing. Yeah.
Do you have anything that you want to plug?
Well, I mean, it's been announced already, so the second half of Invincible Season 2 is going to be coming out soon, which is super exciting. That's where you'll be seeing some of my drama, which is going to be great. If no one's seen it already, definitely watch Gremlins: Secrets of the Mogwai on HBO Max. It's a oh gosh, I love this show so much. Let's see. Do I have anything else to plug? That's the downside of animation, is that you have NDAs you remember, and it's like, has anyone said
Oh
anything yet?
no.
Has anyone talked about this yet? So there'll be stuff coming down the pipe in the future pretty soon. So you'll be seeing new stuff from me, definitely. But yeah, if you guys check out some more of my stuff on different socials, it's Eevee Enchantress, Eevee Enchantress, all one word, on pretty much everything. And or you can visit my website, justcuffart.com, to see different boards that I've done, everything from Avengers Assemble to, speaking of D&D, Legend of Vox Machina, to Legion of Superheroes, Gremlins, Secrets of the Mogwai, all that stuff. And, watch more cartoons.
Yeah.
So we get to do more of this stuff.
real, for real. Oh man, that's amazing. And all of these links will also be in the description of the episode. Well, that's the end of this creative block. Jess, thanks for being our guest and sharing your story.
Yeah, thank you guys so much. This has been such a blast to be part of.
So much fun. And it was awesome getting to draw with you. Thanks to our listeners for also maybe drawing with us, potentially, if you guys do it. But we're thankful to the people that can't draw either. Follow us on social media at CRTV Block, where we ask for drawing prompts and questions to ask our guests. Huge thanks to our editor, Clements, for editing the podcast. Even huger thanks to Marco for helping us produce the show. And extra huge thanks to Ibuka for creating the short clips we've been putting out.
If you love our show, you can support us on Patreon. Becoming a patron gets you early access to interviews and access to our Discord community. You can also support us by interacting with our content, like subscribing, commenting, liking. All of these help us get more reach, get viewed by more people, and that helps a lot. And comment, what did we say? We gave you some commenting prompts during this episode. Click the link in the description of this episode for the Patreon and Jess's socials. I've been your host, V.
And I was Sean. Keep being creative, and we'll see you next week. Bye. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Bye.